The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2011 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2011. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the Internet. If you would like to find out more about the work of ACCS, please visit our website at www.accsedu.org. To order additional talks from this conference, please visit the ACCS website and click on Conferences. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
My name is Rod Gilbert. Our workshop this hour is called Open Architecture Strategic Planning. I tried to think of as many long words I could put together, and I thought maybe people picked the workshop so they could get a little nap before lunch. And tell me, if I speak this loud, do I need the microphone? All right. It's great to have you here in this room, and I'm going to go through some stories in this two schools that I've worked with since 1997, and several things that I'm going to share, the really dumb things that I've done, and things that I've almost had to go back and apologize to people for having done out of silliness and arrogance and good old-fashioned visionary recklessness. So since I'm the only one in the room that's ever had anything like that, then this could be a therapeutic session for all of us. Let me start by getting a show of hands. Raise your hand if you're a board member of a school. Raise your hand. Okay, great. Put them down. How many of you are teachers? Raise your hand. Okay, great. And then administrators. Raise your hand. All right. Now, how many of you are a board member and an administrator? Okay, good. All right. This discussion today is I named Open Architecture Strategic Planning, and I use this phrase a lot at Regent School of Austin, where I've been the headmaster now. I'll be going on my fifth year this fall. Anything that I say and do about Regents can be affirmed, and we do have one of our teachers in the room, so wave as Carol. Dr. Blosser's the smartest person on our campus, so if I say anything that's incongruent with what I do, she has full authority to throw something at me and bring some clarity to our conversation, okay? All right, so when we talk about strategic planning in our classical Christian schools, some of us bring baggage into that conversation because we were a part of some other strategic planning, either with a not-for-profit or a corporate business or a church, and many times we have been, what I see from other people is we go through a strategic planning process, we're all zealous about it, and then we get this really cool three-ring binder with a bunch of numbers and words, and it's one of the more sophisticated dust collectors that we have on our campus. Raise your hands if you've ever experienced something like that. Okay, God bless that young man. God bless that woman. All right. Now, what we've experienced at Regents is the very same thing. We're now going into our 20th year as a school, and we've experienced abnormal growth, almost too much growth, and we feel like we're constantly trying to keep up with some of the strains of our growth trajectory. And so this fall, we will have 940 K-12 students. I know. I feel the same way. And if y'all have been to our campus, the Lord blessed us with beautiful buildings, and we've had to add on, I think, 14 trailers in the last 3 years. So keeping up with that enthusiasm and growth has been quite an experience of trial and error. And but I do believe, and the board believes, that I serve them, that this style of open architecture strategic planning has helped us really get a handle on the growth and the vision of the school and given us some very practical tools of including the whole community in this conversation. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. One of the rules for the speakers was we're supposed to stick to our outline, so I'm going to obey. Okay, And so to give you a clue into my outline, I'm going to give you a word or a word picture for each of the categories right now. So if you have it open, you're ready to take notes. I'm going to go through them right now. So in the first one, under the 60-40 rule, you can write the word stadium. Okay. Under the next one, under principles, you can write the word compass. Under 1B, practices, write the word, phrase green pants. It's a great story. Okay. Under 2A, under creating a communal product, I want you to write the word draft in capital letters. 2B, under letting the process be the target, quilt. Okay. Under at the top of the next page, the word brass ring under C. And then 3 is submit yourselves. That's an easy one. Marriage. Ephesians 5:21. Most men forget that verse. Right, ladies? So submit yourselves one to another. Okay. And then 4, write the word tennis. And copper pipe. Okay. 5, write the word sword. And 6, write the word campfire. Okay, so if I had little playing cards, you know, I could hand these out. We'd do a little game of the cards, right? Okay, so here we go. When we talk about open architecture strategic planning at Regent School of Austin, here's what we mean. I'm going to have to put this down just for a second. Each new generational push of the school. Okay, so new families that come into our school or new faculty that come into the school, if they hear that it's more like a 90-10, these are people who have the image of God deeply embedded in them, and a primary facet of the image of God is creativity. Dorothy Sayers, I can't remember the name of the book now, but she talks about this, the creative impulse because of the image of God in us. And by setting a tone of a 60-40 open architecture, you're telling every new generation of families that come in and every set of faculty that come in is that your opinion matters. We want you involved in this conversation. Okay. So under 1A, where I say the compass, I want you to, if you're interested, I'm just going to talk you through this. Do a little compass of north, south, east, west. Okay. On the west quadrant, write the word principles. On the east point, write the word practices. Okay? And here's what this means. At Regents and at your school, we are a classical Christian school that's embedded in our bylaws, actually under Article 2 of our bylaws that the board has written. And I am a caretaker of the vision that the founding board and really the first decade of the board and the parents and the senior staff handed off to me. So I'm a second generation caretaker of what they've given me. Those things aren't going to change. We only hire Christian coaches. We only hire Christian teachers. We will always have senior rhetoric with a thesis. We will always have Latin. We will always be classical. You getting the point? Those things are not ebbing and flowing, okay? But practices do ebb and flow. Where are we going to go for the seventh grade trip? Right? I heard a couple of chuckles. Why would someone laugh? Why would we laugh at that? Okay. Here's my funny example. For the first 12 years of Regent School of Austin, a fundamental principle was all boys shall wear dark green pants. And then in year 13, something happened. Mission drift occurred. Someone whose name shall not be named uttered the phrase, navy blue pants. No, do not say this. Cannot happen. It cannot happen. It cannot be. The school is changing. All right. Green pants versus navy pants. I think pants are a principle. Amen. God bless that young man. The color of the pants, yeah, you know, we could ebb and flow with time, right? Maybe we'll all be wearing plaid pants one day. God forbid. Okay. You see the point. All of you in this room have been in conversations where someone has said, well, we've always done it that way, and that's always going to be done, and it's going to be done different. Like, I'm a Southern Baptist. I can pick on Southern Baptists. If you're not, you can't. Southern Baptist seven-word creed. We've never done it that way before. It's deeply embedded in our souls, right beside our priesthood of the believer. You want to condition people to be friendly and open in tone at being able to handle the difference between a fundamental principle and a practice. And this is where the board and I really grew in our conversations 4, 5, 6 years ago, of watching us get used to this conversation, because we were trying to find a way to allow the new families and the new people coming in to become deeply invested in the school. And if adults can't touch something and play with it and work with it, they're not really going to help be a co-owner with it, right? The families that started our school were painting the bathrooms, building the decks, mopping the floors, driving on field trips. They were deeply invested. And now as we hand off a next generational tone, if what they're handed off is an exact cookbook, they get very bored. You're not trusting them with it. And so this principles and practices thing has come in very helpful. Okay? We do have, there are practices that become so embedded in a school that no one could touch it. Right? So what were to happen if I, as head of school, knowing that football is not mentioned in Article 2, what would happen if I were to lead an initiative this fall to eliminate our football program? I would be applying for jobs, begging you to hire me, Don, loving the idea of moving to Maryland, whatever, right? All right. There are practices that aren't written down in our bylaws that become so much ingrained that when someone were to say, well, you just need to get rid of that. I say, no, that's just one of those principles that slid from the, on your compass, from the east toward that west quadrant, right? There's some practices that really maybe in 15 years will be so embedded that they're down there. So yeah, you give some room for that. But what you're doing is setting a context of conversation, of not being afraid or offended when someone says, why do we do that? That's not, why are we bothering with that? And if you've grounded yourself in the 60-40 thing, then you can be much more open at leading open-ended conversations, letting people play around with that 40%. Are there any questions before I go on? Any comments? Okay. So just quickly on that compass thing, this has been a very helpful little tool for our school in these strategic conversations. At the top in north, you can write the word story. Okay? And here's what I mean by this. I actually got this little idea from a footnote in one of N.T. Wright's big, thick books that I wish everyone thought I read the whole thing, and I'm not smart enough to read the whole thing. I think it's the one on the Son of God, or the resurrected Son of God. There's a footnote where he does a dogma praxis, a little thing, and so I just adopted it from this. And the idea is that when I ask alumni, what really mattered about your experience at Regents? You know what they don't say? Article 2 and Latin. But you know what they will say? There was this time that I failed my Latin test, and I was cared for. Or we lost this game that we were supposed to win, and it was all fine. Or I couldn't write my way out of a paper bag, but after 3 years going through the program, I figured it out. They tell a story. They do not mention some kind of dogmatic principle or practice. It's embedded in there, but they don't say it. Now, here's the thing. On the bottom, on your south compass, write the word symbols. Okay? And what we do with this little compass illustration is, I have a principle of being a classical school. I have a practice of teaching logic or something like that. I have a story associated with a teacher or associated with something that happened to a child. But the lifeblood of the school really comes down to a teacher being with a child. And when we ask kids to tell us, what was it like to be at Regents? they inevitably quickly jump to the face of a teacher or coach or volunteer parent. And so out of all the symbols that are floating around our school, like we have our little, we have our crest, and we sing Nom Nobis for our school song. That's a symbol. We have Coram Deo, our character award. We have our little arches on the little gymnasium, right? Those are all symbols. Those are visual signs. But the core of it are people's faces, because they have the image of God in them. And children who reminisce about their experience in school go back to what a teacher did for or with them when they were hurting or inspired. Okay, so do you see how this compass thing, I've embedded it into our strategic conversation to allow everybody this lifeblood conversation of life-giving, like Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians 2, to sum it's life to life, right, in that passage. But then there's also dogma of the school, things that we do. So it's people, and content. Okay. Now, and one of the mistakes that I made when I was helping start Trinity Academy in Raleigh, North Carolina, was just in my youthfulness, I was so content-driven in my mind that I thought, if I could just get that Latin curriculum down, kids are going to just show up in the admissions open house. Well, that doesn't work that way. And what they wanted was life. Do you understand? Okay. Okay, let's move on down to number two, under process and product. The fall of 2007, we had notebooks of a few other strategic plans for the school, and we were looking for a little more innovative way to do it. And so here's the six steps of what we did. Number one, we had the board go off to an off-site location for like three Thursday nights in a row for 3 or 4 hours. And they just whiteboarded words that matter to them, words that they think are at the core of Regents. And it took three long, you know, sometimes knockdown, you know, good old iron-on-iron sparks flying, you know, among the board, because they are impassioned about the school. And I got to watch as they began to find a crystallizing essence of what the school really was. Green pants didn't make the cut, you know. And they've crystallized what they saw as the core principles and words. And we get it to like 30 phrases and words. And then they signed off on it to me as their head of school. And then I started taking that out to the street. And so step number two, what I did is I grabbed a few employees and I would compare those words to our documents. You know, how close is this to what we say we're going to be? How far off are we? And I started to shape a short document that would animate what the board had told me were their core things. And then number three, I appointed five teachers. Step number three was I appointed five teachers to be strategic plan task force. And I had one teacher be the chair of the task force. And then they included a few parents in it too. And I spent maybe a few months with them coaching them on how to create a strategic plan. And then showed them four or five samples. But I told them, this isn't exactly what I want. It's almost like what we want. This is sort of like what we want, but it's not exactly what we want. It's like Ezekiel in Ezekiel chapter 1, when he saw the throne of the Lord. It's sort of like silver, but it's brighter than silver. And it's as purple as amethyst, except it's more purple than amethyst. You just feel Ezekiel struggling through that passage. He's never seen such glory, right? So I was showing them these different drafts and saying, what I want you to do is make it your own and make sure that it includes these 30 phrases. That was my 60%, right? And so then I would report back to the board, and they'd say, Rod, you're taking us down a path we don't want to go. No, trust me, it's going to be fine. So this group for several months just kept crafting it, and then they would show some of their paragraphs and words to their friends. And kind of, you know, what we is the word, the verb you could write down is socialize, We started socializing some of those paragraphs very quietly among friends and maybe over dinner. And then step number four, I guess I just said it, we socialized it among some pockets of people for several months. Step number five is make sure that I give that group of five some room to really articulate the strategic plan. It's very important. If they feel like I'm just honing in on them all the time, then it's not really theirs, right? And then step number six was remind them that at some point that document's going to come back to the filter to the head of school, me, and then to the board, and the board either will vote on it yes or no. Or, so there is an authority at some point. And so under A, creating a communal product, I had the word draft in capital letters. And so I bet for 6-8 months, we would have this rough draft document. We would write draft real big across the front. And then I would go have pancakes at Kirby Lane with one of the dads. He's an unofficial influencer. Like, he doesn't have a title at the school. I'm sure y'all don't have any of those. I'm the only one. But this dad has, his words carry great weight among a lot of families, and he's a great guy. And so I take him out for pancakes, and I slide it across the table and let him play with it. You know, what do you mean by that? Well, you probably don't emphasize that. I'm letting him play along with me with it. And he sees the word draft. And what it's saying to him is, please help me. I don't know how to write this on my own. Okay. And so that's an inclusion with his voice into it. So we did that for several months. We took a 4-month hiatus because I got sick. And then we restarted, and I'm fine. And then, so under B, it says letting the process be the target. What word did I put down? Quilt. Okay. When I was in seminary, my wife had never done any sewing, never occurred to her at all. Some of her friends, the wives that were in seminary, this lady was an incredible quilter. And so for a year and a half, Angie learned how to do hand quilting. And she produced two beautiful quilts, one for Katie and one for Ryan. But if you look back on it, Angie loves the product that it produced because we have them actually hanging in our home now. They're beautiful. But you know, when she sees that quilt, what she really sees is the ministry that those ladies put into her heart while we were in seminary. The process of the quilting, Angie would say, is probably more important than the quilt itself. Okay? And so my challenge to you is, when you go through a strategic planning process, get that in your mind, that the process of open dialogue and conversation and feeding the seedbed of parents and faculty being allowed to talk to you and be a part of the process is more important than what the final product actually looks like. Okay? And I really believe that. And so, all right. So let's go over to the next page. I said a brass ring. Is that the one that I used? Okay, so I use that phrase often when carousels years ago, before there were enough lawyers in the country and litigation and safety things, there would be a beautiful carousel at an amusement park, and then hanging out on a post outside of the carousel was a brass ring. And what would kids try to do? As they're being slung around that thing, and they're reaching out. Well, I don't even think they do that anymore, like I said, because of litigation probably. But kids would stretch. Could they just possibly get there? Okay, they got the brass ring. All right, here was the brass ring when we were talking with the board and our senior staff and the parents through the strategic planning process. Was not the final product. Like, y'all can all go download it. From our website, it's like a 20-page document, okay? That final product, looking at it, was not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal was that when families and employees read it, at some point they go, you know, that sounds like me. I got to help be a part of that. Okay, that's a more organic part of the process. But getting people to truly, by substance, know that they helped put those sentences into it was more important than the actual product of saying, here's the recipe book for the next couple of years. And so there were times where we would slow our processes down a little bit just to make sure we gathered a few more people groups into that conversation. So every spring in April, I do a, it's called a huddle with the head. Remember, it's Texas, so huddle, you know, football. Okay, so the ladies get me a basket of cookies and a bunch of juice boxes or lemonade, Snapples or something. And they soup me up and stick me out in the middle of carpool in a patch of grass. And I sit there and wait with a chair, with about 10 chairs. And I look about as comfortable as an eighth grade boy at a middle school dance. I do. I don't know if I want someone to come up to me or not. That's the boy doesn't know, right? So, but what I do is I throw myself out into the middle of our carpool system under some shade. We tell the families we're doing huddle with the head. And what it means is parents just come and sit and chat. And I do 30 of these every April. And for about an hour. And so what I did that first year is I brought my draft of the strategic plan that wasn't complete. And in that conversation, maybe a mom would say something about such and such, and I go, oh, that reminds me. And I'd pull out my draft and turn to page 18, and she'd see all this scribble stuff. And then I would say to her, could you write that sentence down because I don't want to forget it? And then she would write it down like that. Okay? So you see the process of letting people own that document. Okay? All right, so that was... Now, we're coming up on our third year from that document, so we've done little iterations of it. And so this next year, we'll do round two, where we'll take what we've learned in the first 3 years from that original document that you can see on the website. And now that since we're a learning community, we've learned a little more. We take that little 20-page document, and I can read it now and think, wow, how did we leave out X? I mean, what were we thinking, right? But I'll do the same thing again next year, where we've learned more things. The board has their vision is incredible for the school. It's an honor to work with them and the parents that are involved with them and their subcommittees. But now we just take another shot at revising just a new version of that original document and allow another level of parents and employees animate the vision. So we'll call it back to 60%, open it back up. Does that all this make sense so far? Okay. Well, see, we did that 3 years ago. We're going to do it again this fall. So that was part of our learning curve, too. We didn't know. And we thought, well, we're just going to let that document sit there till we feel like, no, we're ripe enough and we've become more, we have a greater sense of knowledge of who we are. To where when's the right time to strike another version. So we think it'll be in 11-12. And so that's part of our board retreat agenda in July is to decide, do I pull the trigger and say we're going to write a new version of it in 11-12. So, but the idea, though, is, remember, the idea is the brass ring isn't the product, and it's not that big three-ring binder that gives exact 3- and 5-year and 7-year SMART goals, right? Because what happens after year one? Well, things change, you know. So our original document had a lot of organic conversation to it. It had some tactical goals for the next 2 years. We hit some of them, and we did not hit all of them. And then we learned from that. And I think the next version of it, it'll be reflective of just more maturing of the school. We'll have maybe a little, it'll have a finer detail to it, but it's after a lot of hands have touched it. Y'all see how that works? Okay, so we'll move on down to submitting yourselves one to another. What was my phrase? Was it marriage? Okay, so some of us have heard the phrase complementarian marriage. Have y'all ever heard that? Raise your hands if you're a nerd like me and have heard that before. Oh, it's okay. Okay, there's a way to talk about a healthy biblical relationship of husband and wife. And so as I've gone through some of these conversations with families, I know when I'm as head of school and the board technically own the school, I have to be submissive to them. And when parents come into the school year, at some level, they do have to submit to the greater systems of what we've endorsed for the year. So like if a family comes in and says, we like being here, but we want our fourth grader to play high school football, and we're not going to take Latin, and we don't want to do math, and they turn into a cafeteria, think, no, you've agreed to work under our authority. You know, you in loco parentis, we are in the place of you caring for your child. So there is a submission that parents have to give to us, but it doesn't mean a domineering, we know what we're doing, you be quiet, drop your kid off in carpool and go away. All right? And I've made that mistake before. It didn't go real well. Okay. So here, let me give you an example of where a family comes in and demands something. And then instead of, and I've made mistakes on this, but instead of me quickly just going to blows and telling them no way and da-da-da and how dare you and here's your money back and don't let, you know. 2 years ago, I had some parents respond to our strategic plan document. And then through some other sources, I don't know where, they learned about a book called The Homework Myth. Have you all ever heard of that book before? And there's a movement in some schools to do away with all homework completely. Are you all aware of that? Okay. And so these moms come in, we're friends, and they sit down, and in response to this sort of 60-40 culture, they come in and they are convinced Regent's going to be a better school if we remove all homework. Okay. And so instead of me just telling them that's just never going to work, I said, well, I think that's unlikely based on the rigor of our program. But if you will engage with me for 45 days in a study on it, I promise to come alongside you and actually learn the values that are behind this movement. And so I promise to not, I promise to suspend my final judgment. Or should we really consider this? But I need the three of you to become part of the conversation with me. And so I bought two or three of the books that they had referenced and read enough of them to quite honestly know, yeah, we're not going to do that. And but I engaged them in an ongoing conversation through a couple of coffees of where there was a value stream and what that movement was saying that I really agreed with, the principle of some of it, but the outcome of it was totally against what we were doing at Regents. And so I needed to, over time, through a couple of coffees, let them know that we're going to have homework. But because of my slow relationship with them, and I didn't get overly reactionary or some kind of takeover, and are they doing parking lot, talk against the school and all that, I had to just slow the conversation down and win them into a stronger partnership with what the school's really doing. And so they're all still at the school. They love the school. They're more invested now. And at the end of the thing, they came back and said, yeah, you were right. We need to do homework. But it was a slow process of letting them be. And I genuinely thought, well, if I could pull off all the objectives of school without homework, why would I be opposed to that? You know, so I had to genuinely, with earnestness, think, well, I'm willing to think through that. And at the end of the day, I thought, no, we're not going to do that. We need homework. You know, but I mean, if anything, idle hands are the devil's workshop. I don't know what kids will do from 4 to 11 anyways. So, except I know your kids are perfect, so they don't have a problem. All right. So on number 4, it says parents engaging in their role as vested co-creators. Okay, so we did a survey this spring. To be honest, we've not been great at doing online surveys, and so we're getting better at that. That's all I have to say about that. I've already told you how I do the huddles with the head. That's like a qualitative surveying where I write down every question that someone asks me. And this spring, I had at least 200 separate questions the parents came up in. And then I logged them as far as quantity of which ones are being asked the most and least. And then I'm going to report that to the board in July to give them sort of another snapshot of the school. My tennis metaphor there, I learned this little metaphor, I think, in the book. Asking the Right Questions by Brown, and we use it in one of our 10th grade rhetoric class. And it goes like this. If you're listening to someone with the sole purpose of when they stop talking, you're going to say to them what you're calculating the whole time. Now, my wife would say I'm really good at this, okay, in a negative way, where I'm calculating, waiting for the lob, okay, wham, hit it back, okay. That is not a real conversation, okay. That is a dehumanizing situation. So when parents come and sit down, when they're saying something or they're talking to the game or whatever, you have to, I'm encouraging you to adopt a true, real, earnest learning disposition of, I don't know everything. I need to learn more things. And slow down the immediate reaction back. Now, my tendency is to want to give the immediate reaction back. Sometimes it's because I really do know what I'm talking about. And sometimes it's either out of arrogance or insecurity. I don't want them to find out that I don't know the answer to something. Maybe, am I the only one that feels that way? It's okay. Where when someone's asking the head of school something, and I've got all those books in my office, I start to get the impression, falsely and rather pridefully, that I'm supposed to know the answer to every question. And if I protract that out to that person, I'm going to lower their ability to actually speak truth into my heart. And so Mark Twain said this way better than I could, which you did a lot of things. You have two ears and one mouth. Use them proportionately. And so in our strategic planning conversations and processes, it was a very much of a learning, listening mode. Okay? One or two more things. I was with a dad the other day, and he was hot and bothered about something. And I agreed with about a third of what he was hot and bothered about. I was just hot. He was hot and bothered. And it was very interesting, you know. When I'm hot and bothered, I get kind of quiet. When he's my friend, when he's hot and bothered, he's unquiet. And so at one point he stopped himself, and I'm sure this has never happened to y'all, someone's hot and bothered with you, but he stopped himself and he said, man, I'm just chewing you up, and man, I'm just, can't believe I just said that. And so, No. We're not working at a copper pipe factory. We're talking about your child. I'd rather you just blast it out there and let's get some good old cowboy talk. Just say it. He went, what? Yeah, just come on. Get it out. We're friends. We're going to make this work. We may end up disagreeing at the end, but if you don't know how else to say it, just say it. Just blood, guts, and tears and all. Just give me that cowboy talk. Come on. And he was like, all right. And then he did. You know, he accepted my invitation, right? But me taking a posturing of trying my best to not be offended by how he's delivering it, he just had to get it out. And we have a couple of other employees that have snuck in, and Denise is our director of first through third grade. And she had a situation last fall that we have forevermore called the vomit session. Right, Denise? We had a plan set up. I mean, we thought when we give that plan out, teachers are going to be like throwing little rose petals at our feet, thanking us. Oh, thank you for writing this document and putting it down in front of us. Did that happen? No. We needed trash cans and maybe a lot of plastic, you know. But you know what? The people in that room needed to do? They needed to just get it out. And they needed someone like Denise and then Chris and follow up to let them. And then when they came back the next day, I can't believe I said this. Hey, we're going to make this work. Okay? Very important. Now, you don't want to have a lot of vomit sessions. Okay? It means that you'd be applying for a job somewhere else. But here's the hard one. Here's where it gets under number... number five. I'll skip to that one. Not skip. The next one's teachers. It just reminded me of the vomit session. I said, what was the word picture I gave? Sword. Okay, great. This is a good one. Okay, so I didn't make this. I didn't make any of these up. Okay. The sword. Here it is. Okay, so I come up with what I think is an incredible plan of what we're going to do. Okay, so I'll pull one out. I'll pull one of my little plans out. This is very important. Okay, so here's my plan. This has blood, sweat, and tears. These are things that have been on my heart for a year. Okay, this is it. Right here. Now, when I get into a conversation with someone, here's the way I will tend to hold my plan. You ready? Watch this. I go into a meeting, and here Sharon and I are. Sharon, I want your honest feedback. Aurelia said? Be not the dancer, be the wrestler, dug in and ready for a fight. No, Sharon, I really want your honest feedback. Like that. All right, here's what happens. If I'm holding my idea this close to vital organs, and Sharon, in all earnestness, pulls out the sword that Excalibur wishes it were, and she pokes the idea, and here I am holding it. What's likely to happen? Oh, it's right down to the heart. Okay? So when I'm talking about a posturing of humility and getting people to be involved with you, I have to take this thing that's so precious to me and do what Bilbo really had a hard time doing and lay it down. And then the two of us get to whack at it all we want. That's hard to do, okay? But it's a posturing and strategic planning where now the two of us look at an inanimate object and we get to go fiddle around with it. But if I'm going to be biblical and follow Christian conviction, my confidence is not in that document or what I produced. My confidence is only in Christ. And so my self-identity is not in what this becomes. My self-identity is that Christ redeemed me. And I get to be on this earth to be involved with people, and I'm fascinated by that. And there are times where I get to be a part of creating something, perhaps. But I've got to let it go and get my identity out of it as fast as possible and allow other people to poke at it. And it is so relaxing as I'm on the front of learning all of what I just said. Okay, all the older, smarter people in the room, y'all get this, but I'm learning. I'm 41, so I'm learning this. But the older I get, the more I can release these kind of things and go, I give this to the Lord, and my identity is Him alone. And so when I engage Sharon, I truly mean, let's go whack at it and make it better on behalf of children. Yeah, not based on my self-identity. Okay? All right, so we're getting close down to the end. It is now 11:37. We're to end at 11:50. Is that right? Okay, so I'll hit my final thing. And before I do this final thing, does anyone have a question or comment? Ty? Right. Okay. How does that work? All right, great. Okay, so we put it on the website, And then I reference it in the newsletter from time to time in a weekly newsletter, like under these things, we fulfilled this. Okay. And then the last 3 years, we did an annual updated chart on here are the things we're planning on doing the next year. And that got released with the directory that we hand out in August. And then when we're in committee meetings and subcommittee meetings and development meetings, we get in the habit of just quoting it on a regular basis. And so it still doesn't have this three-ring binder thing that's lord over the environment. It's a little more subtle than that. But I knew about last summer, I knew we had hit a real stride with it when I had parents coming to the huddles and to some committee meetings that I was in with highlighted versions of it. And I had one mom that was very intriguing. It just made me just love her more. She actually wrote a little thing to me and footnoted it. And then she said, you know, Rod, if you do this, you're fulfilling 2.1 and 3.7 of the strategic plan. And I went, that's exactly right. I hadn't even thought of doing it that way and in that timing. And I guess that's what we're going to do. Okay. And I think that as we grow, Ty, I think that there's a better way where we could have like quarterly review updates or like a State of the Union kind of PowerPoint slide presentation of updates on the website. But that's not where we were yet. But that's a great question. But when people started quoting it to me, I thought, okay, we've hit something. Because they feel like they have something to add to it. Any other thoughts or questions? I appreciate y'all's attentiveness. I'll finish with this. Leaders of the school, you are commissioned to have the vision of the school. What is the future vision of the school? Okay. And I've read a lot over the years in just leadership theory. You've got your great man theory, like Rockefeller, Carnegie, and so on, where it's this dominant, usually not always, dominant male personality that it's his vision, and he's driving the thing, and it's sort of a what would so-and-so do bracelet on everybody's wrist, right? And so that doesn't work in this culture. It doesn't work. Here's a metaphor. What was the last one I said? Campfire. Okay. The campfire metaphor goes like this. So I, as a head of school, am commissioned by the board to carry the long-term strategic mission forward and cast a vision of what Regent should be like in 20 years, right? And what is our outcome? What do we want to do with this thing? Okay. And when I first became head, honestly, I was so mesmerized by that question that I felt wholly inadequate. That's the honest truth. I remember telling the board, I can see pictures of where we're going, but if y'all are asking me to act like some kind of prophet, is that what you're asking? Am I supposed to have it that articulate? And thankfully, if the answer had been yes, then I wouldn't have been hired. I would be doing something else. But here's the way it works. Here's how the campfire works. And a friend of mine that coaches headmasters in this way, here's what helped. When I'm at school, I see myself as like a Native American where we're all huddled around the campfire and maybe smoking a peace pipe or something, you know, and we're all talking about things that are going on and there's tones, different people's opinions, right? There is a chief, and I'm the chief as head of school, but we're in slow, soft tones. And then as they bed down for the night, my responsibility is to sneak away and go look out further. Okay? That's what I'm supposed to go do. So I go out and do that, and then I notice maybe a mesa or a valley or maybe a water source or whatever, and I think that might be where we need to go. And then I come back while everybody's still asleep, and we wake up the next day and we start the conversation again. And because I'm the one holding the keys as the head, I have to be very slow at giving the absolute definitive thing. For one thing, I may be wrong. I need more clarity. And another thing, I need other people to come along with me. So we get around that campfire, and we talk, and we talk, and we talk. And I insert a few things. I tease out a few things. I try a few things. I get response. It puts me in a learning mode. I get a little bit more clarity about the heart of the school. Everybody beds down. Then I go back out again and do that again and come back. And this is the board and I, as the strategic leaders of the school. And so the idea then is, at some point, there's the right moment where I say, here's where we need to go. And when I say that as the head and as the board says it, the people that have been in that campfire may be a little nervous about some of it, but they go, you know what, we've been a part of that. We can see this. And then you've got a whole movement of an institution that moves to its next phase and its next derivation. And it's strength by numbers at that point, okay? And so that would be my metaphor that I wanted to end on, to encourage you to humbly take on the role of being the vision setter, but do so in such a way that does not make you the prophet that is likely to be stoned on the edge of the village when you try to take them down a path that they are not ready to go down. Okay. Are there any other questions? If I let y'all out early, I get extra points. So, yes, Denise in the back, yes. What? Oh, Denise is the director of grades 1 through 3 at Regents. Okay, go ahead. The homework illustration. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, you and we've had this conversation. I'm glad you asked. One of the things is you do have to become very good at saying no in a very kind way. Okay. So one dad said to me, Roger, the master of the pleasant absolutely no. And so I do think you have to engage people in it, but if they start needling down on a 60% core value, you can't just say in the conversation or something thereof, you just say, you know what, if we go down that path, I think you are cutting into the muscle of this particular value that is not to be questioned. I could be wrong. But we need to go down this path to make sure that this next step does not cut into the muscle of that value. Is that you have to have the freedom to say it, but you see how I qualified it? But instead of saying, you know, no, we're not going to talk about it, right? I'm submitting myself to the person by saying, let's go talk about it, but I'm giving a fair weather warning that may likely end up with an absolute no because it may be cutting into the muscle of a value stream. And you have to be strong enough to say that. And ultimately, for me, I have to have a very resolute board that are the caretakers of that mission, which thankfully, that's what I've gotten to be a part of my whole time there. And so, and sometimes, and to Denise's point too, do you know what's the United States Congress metaphor of the Senate is the saucer that cools the heat of the U.S. representatives? Ever heard that before? Have you ever heard it before? Well, now I'm just slaying it. Okay. But the idea is that I, as head of school and an educator, I may push for something, but I do entrust my vision to the saucer of the board to go, Rod, maybe we need to give that a little more time. And they do slow me down sometimes in a proper way. So, all right, another question or thought? Well, I've appreciated your attentiveness. If you want to visit about this, I'd love to visit some more the next couple of days. Come by and chat. I'm going to leave a stack of business cards up here. If you want to ask me any more questions about the process we're going through, you can email me as well. I would love to be of service to your school. Thank you. God bless.